With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Wood joins us now on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. How are you this afternoon, Ryan?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. Long time no talk. Really, as usual, Ryan, fine work in making the case for Leroy Butler to get into the Hall of Fame. But not only do you make the case in terms of laying out his resume, but you also say that the road is somewhat paved now due to recent entries into the Pro Football Hall of Fame for Leroy to get in sometime in the near future, right?
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, even Leroy brought up himself, saying that he thinks that Brian Dawkins kind of opened the door. And And really, the story idea generated with a couple questions, and the biggest one, the first one, with when Jerry Kramer went into the Hall of Fame, was, well, who's next? I mean, for so long Jerry Kramer was the guy that Packers fans, if so loudly and vocally were behind for his candidacy for so long. So there's a void now with him being enshrined, and I think that, you know, historians of the team might throw out a couple names. Gil Gillingham, the great guard of the 70s, was an all-pro guard. There's some that believe he had a Hall of Fame talent. Bart Starr was always very vocal for Bob Skowronski, the blindside blocker for him with those glory years Packers. But I think that pretty close to universally, Leroy Butler is the guy now that assumes that mantle of the biggest quote-unquote snub that hasn't been enshrined and hasn't even been a finalist among Packers. And so I wanted to go into it with an open mind and to kind of explore what kind of a case does he have. And when you look at the numbers, when you talk about, I talked with Brian Billick, who everyone knows, obviously, as the Baltimore Ravens head coach, won a Super Bowl, but in the 1990s, he was the Minnesota Vikings offensive coordinator. He devised and planned, schemed offenses against Leroy Butler and that Packers defense for a long time. The more and more you look at it, the more and more it becomes a pretty clear case that, Leroy Butler has obviously a lot of on his resume to indicate that his time in Canton should come at some point.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Leroy Butler saga here. As far as he kind of, at least in my opinion, at least, with what Fritz Schirmer allowed him to do, kind of redefine that position a little bit, as far as allowing him to play up at the line of scrimmage, blitz the quarterback as much as he was allowed to blitz the quarterback, racking up the sacks and so forth. Yet I don't see a lot of talk about how he kind of changed that safety position.
No, you're absolutely right. He, at the very least, he was a trailblazer. I'm not sure if he was the very first. I don't know if he was an original prototype, but at the very least, he was at the very onset of that and very, very possibly could have been the original prototype. And look, he was the first defensive back in the game's history to be in the 2020 club, and that's 20 career interceptions, 20 career sacks. Talking with Brian Billick, one of the things that he said was, with Roy Butler, it was different than those Blitzburg defenses with the Steelers, where and Dom Capers was part of that, where you would bring extra defensive backs on the blitz, and that was really scheme driven. With Roy Butler, Packers just dropped him into the box, and he was good enough on his own to be a viable pass rusher. He didn't need a lot of scheme protection. He just was that good about getting to the point, getting to the quarterback, and wreaking havoc in the backfield. You see that a lot today. A point that Billick made when I was speaking with him that, used to be that it was pretty rare to draft a safety in the first round. Butler obviously was a second-round pick. Brian Dawkins was a second-round pick.
Butler was drafted as a cornerback, right? And then converted to a safety after that first year.
Right, right, yep. That's another thing that you often saw happen. But you're seeing more and more the talent at the back end more and more is moving to safety. Obviously, corners always want to be a premier position, but you're seeing safeties drafted more in the first round now, and you're seeing guys that otherwise, 10, 15 years ago might have been a corner no matter what. They're more open to moving to the back end and being a safety. So that position has really, in terms of the value given to that position, that's skyrocketed. And when you look at who laid the foundation for that, the blueprint of how a versatile safety can be used in a defense, Leroy Butler was at the very onset of that and was a trailblazer.
So how beneficial is it, though, for if you look at Dawkins to go in? I think if you look around the league, well, you probably got Woodson's probably will be a first belt. I mean, how much does that help Leroy in that you've now have some safeties that are coming up that you know are going to be in that they should take a look at them?
Well, once you get one safety in, once you know, Brian Dawkins is only the eighth player to be enshrined who is exclusive to the safety position. I mean, that's been the most undervalued, underdeveloped position when it comes to the Hall of Fame process. Once you get guys in, it allows the committee, I think, to look and compare to other safeties who are outside the Hall. In the case for Butler and for Leroy, he's got one more career interception than Brian Dawkins, playing four fewer seasons because he had that fractured shoulder that ended his career at age 33. Now, obviously, longevity is part of that. But when you look at, you know, we talk about the 2020 club with Butler, 38 career receptions, 20 and a half career sacks. If he gets to play another 2 years, if that injury doesn't happen, we're probably talking about a 40-20 guy. Yeah. Just the name alone, there's more ring there. So, I think having more safeties in the Hall, and you look on the near horizon here, Ed Reed, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Troy Polamalu is going to be a Hall of Famer. I don't know if he's first ballot or it's not going to take that long. One of the things that Leroy said when I talked with him was he thinks that the safeties coming up will help him. He thinks that there's going to be a year where they put two in, maybe him and Polamalu get in the same year or something like that. But certainly there's going to be a run on safeties coming up, and that's going to allow the committee to compare to other safeties that are outside the Hall.
I got another question. I don't know if you know the answer to it because it just popped in my brain. So – the Buffalo Bills, when their run happened with Jim Kelly, they went to, what, four straight Super Bowls or whatever it is? They didn't win. The Packers went to two straight Super Bowls. They won one, and they lost one. Do they deserve more than two Hall of Famers from that team, having been to two straight Super Bowls? And in relation, I don't know how many the Bills have from their four Super Bowl teams in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But it was just something that crossed my mind of whether or not they deserve more than two from a team that went to two straight Super Bowls and really was a team that was one of the dominant teams of the 90s.
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at those 90s Packers, I think Butler and then Mike Holmgren both have legitimate Hall of Fame cases. I think Mike Holmgren, when you look at his coaching record, what he did, not just in Green Bay, but the whole body of work, obviously going on to Seattle and building that into a Super Bowl team. I think those are the two figures that, along with Ron Wolf and Brett Favre and Reggie White, of course, that you look at as guys that have a case down the road. You know, I don't know how the committee thinks in terms of stacking up the K-Gun Bills that went to four straight Super Bowls to the Packers. But when you look at that Packers defense, and that was obviously that was a Super Bowl championship winning caliber defense. The name that everyone mentions is, for rightfully so, is Reggie White. But on that back end, the versatility that Leroy Butler had, and it was really fascinating to talk to a guy who, and Brian Billick, who devised offensive game plans against that team. Just because how rare it was and how unseen it was for a safety to present that much pressure on a quarterback, you know, there are years that Butler would have six sacks and six picks. I mean, that's, you know, incredibly versatile. It forced you to take him seriously as a legitimate pass rushing threat, and in those ways, it did lessen the burden on a Reggie White. It did lessen the burden on a Sean Jones. So, because not just everyone talks 38 career interceptions more than Brian Dawkins. Yes, that's big at the safety position, but what he did in the box, along with being the deep cover guy that he was, is what really separated him from the pack.
Talking with our Green Bay football insider, Ryan Wood, here on the Wendy's Big Show. Just before we brought you on, Ryan, we were talking about the news that the Bears declined to pick up the $8 million option on Josh Sitton, so he'll hit the free agent market. You think there's any chance that he and the Packers will talk, or has that bridge been burned?
I can't imagine that he would be back in Green Bay. Now, I've been wrong before, and, you know, I want to – We're dealing with a new GM here. That's the only caveat that I would say is we don't have much of a track record and a history on Brian Gutekunst yet to be, you know, with Ted Thompson, it was almost automatic. Guys on the market, nope. I mean, we just kind of knew how Ted Thompson worked. We don't know that about Brian Gutekunst yet. With that said, I can't imagine that Josh Sitton would ever play for the Packers again. Certainly not with the same bits of the organization in place that did release him 2 years ago. You know, it's a new GM, but it's the same head coach, Mike McCarthy, same offensive line coach. I'd be very surprised, and I'll tell you, in hindsight, that decision just keeps looking better. Lane Taylor's probably the most reliable and one of the best linemen that they had this past year, still young enough, late 20s. It was a big risk at the time, and I know it was a shock at the time, and I didn't understand at the time, I'll admit that, but in hindsight, the decision to go with Lane Taylor over Josh Sitton just keeps looking better and better.
I'm putting myself out here on this, Ryan. I'm going to ask you this question here. Defensively, right now, just on this roster right now, defensively, and if you're Petten and he comes in here, who would you try to build this defense around?
I think they were onto something with how they wanted to use the safeties last year, but it didn't pan out.
Nope.
What they have, the strongest part of their team is their defensive tackles and Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark. The problem with that is not a premier position. So I think the most important thing that they do going forward, it isn't so much who's on the roster now. They have to hit big at 14 on an
edge
rusher.
Yeah, they do. No, they do.
They have to. I mean, that's mandatory if this defense wants to ascend to a Super Bowl caliber defense. And then they've got to find probably not on this roster. They got to find another corner. Probably be most likely, most preferably through free agency to match with that edge rusher. This is a team that needs to look outside for some pieces to be cornerstones. You know, Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark are certainly part of that equation. There's not a lot of Super Bowl winning defenses that their best parts come on the interior.
Well, let me ask you this: Is Clay Matthews too old to build a defense around right now?
Yeah, I don't think that he's that kind of player anymore. Now, I get a sense in dealing with fans that there's almost a 0 or 100 feel. There's no gray area. Like, Clay Matthews is a good football player still. He's not a great football player. At least he hasn't been the past couple
of
years.
No, he has
not been great. But he's good. He's not. It's not either your.
But if you put him at middle backer, he's better there than he is at outside.
I would agree with that, and I think that he at middle backer. Look, in 2014, when he switched midway through the year to middle backer, he was their best pass rusher playing off the line.
I mean,
you look at that season. He didn't do much in the first 8 games when he was exclusively an edge rusher. He didn't do much getting after the quarterback. It wasn't until they moved him off the line that he actually got after the quarterback, got sacks, and because of that got to Pro Bowl. He was a much better pass rusher off the line. So I think his versatility, and it's something that Mike Petten alluded to when he talked about Clay Matthews and how he fits. I think they're going to be awfully versatile with him. I think they need to be, especially at this point of his career. I don't think that Clay Matthews at this stage can be the best player on a defense that wins a Super Bowl. They've got to get more youth at edge rush, and they've got to get more experience at corner.
That is our Green Bay football insider, Ryan Wood. Find his work inside the Green Bay Press Gazette, PackersNews.com. His latest piece, making the case for Leroy to get into Canton, is up at 105.7FMTheFan.com, our top story. And Ryan, I'm sure we'll be checking in more frequently as the offseason and the NFL draft approaches in the coming weeks and months. I always appreciate it.
Yeah, 1 week from today, I'm heading to Indy. The combine's starting, so yeah, it's about to become that pre-draft process.
Here it is.
Nice. And you'll see our very own Mike Clemens out there. Thanks, Ryan. We'll talk again next week then.
Quick.
All right, take care.
Ryan Wood joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. If you're looking for a simple and convenient pre-approval process for your new home, construction, or renovation loan, call Great Midwest Bank, committed to providing uniquely tailored common-sense mortgage products since 1935.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.